Jai Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila, chapter 24, texts 163,
is it?
Yes, to 169. We'll actually go beyond 169 because it makes more sense in terms of the reading. But we will chant the verse of 169 because that's what's on the board. And our chanter for this morning will be Sri Gopinathacharya Prabhu, because he can actually read this stuff.
Tasya yuhadeto prayateta kovido nalabhyate yat pramatamu paryata nalabhyate dhukha vadanyata sukham kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa.
So we won't do the word for word because we're not going to read this verse now. We're going to go back to another verse where we are going to start from 163. These 13 types of yogis and munis are called Shanta Bhaktas, for they render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the neutral stage. That verse really should have gone with the last reading. I'm not going to go over it again. So this starts to make more sense. The word Atma sometimes means the mind. In this case, the word Atmarama means a person who is satisfied by mental speculation. When such a person associates with a pure devotee, he takes the devotional service at the lotus feet of Krishna. And this is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. Those who follow the great path, the path of great saintly mystic yogis, take to the yogic gymnastic process and begin worshipping from the abdomen, where it is said that Brahman is located. Such people are called Sharkaraksha, which means that they are situated in the gross bodily conception. There are also followers of the rishi known as Aruna. Following his path, they observe the activities of the arteries. Thus they gradually rise to the heart, where subtle Brahman, Paramatma, is situated. They then worship him. O unlimited Ananta, better than these persons are the mystic yogis who worship you from the top of their heads. Beginning with the abdomen and proceeding through the heart, they reach the top of the head and pass through the Brahmarandra, the hole at the top of the skull. Thus these yogis attain the perfectional platform and do not enter the cycle of birth and death again. Being attracted by the transcendental qualities of Krishna, such yogis become great saints. At that time, not being hampered by the yogic process, they engage in unalloyed devotional service. Atma also means endeavor. Being attracted by Krishna's transcendental qualities, some saints make a great endeavor to come to the point of rendering service to him. And then this is the text that we just chanted. And this is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st canto, 5th chapter. The transcendental position cannot be attained by wandering up and down from Brahmaloka and Satyaloka to Patalaloka. If one is actually intelligent and learned, he should endeavor for that rare transcendental position. By the force of time, one attains whatever material happiness is available within the 14 worlds, just as one attains distress in due course of time. But since spiritual consciousness is not attained in this way, one should try for it. This is a very short purport. Prabhupada says, Narada Muni was speaking to Vyasadeva in this text, who was morose even after he had compiled all the Vedic literatures. In this connection, Narada Muni advised Srila Vyasadeva to try to attain devotional service and nothing else. And then I think two other texts. Those who are eager to awaken their spiritual consciousness and who thus have unflinching, undeviated intelligence certainly attain the desired goal of life very soon. It's a quotation from the Naradiya Purana. The word cha may be used in the place of api, which gives emphasis to something. Thus, it means that without sincere endeavor in devotional service, one cannot attain the love of Godhead. And this is a... Yes, sorry. Devotional service, devotional perfection is very difficult to attain for two reasons. First, unless one is attracted to Krishna, he cannot attain devotional perfection, even if he renders devotional service for a long time. Second, Krishna does not easily deliver perfection in devotional service. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.6.18, Muktim Dadati Karichit, Srila Sukadev Goswami told Maharaj Parikshit that Krishna readily grants liberation but does not very readily grant perfection in devotional service. This means that Krishna wants to see that a devotee is actually sincere and serious and that he does not have ulterior motives. If this is the case, devotional service can very easily be successful. Otherwise, it is very difficult to obtain from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This verse appears in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And then, one final text, 173 will be the last text. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. That's from the Bhagavad Gita 10.10. Just reflecting on these texts, these are very, very nice verses, I must say, that have been quoted to explain the Atmarama verse in terms of pure devotional service. We start at 168 where the text says Atma means endeavor. Being attracted by Krishna's transcendental qualities, some saints make a great endeavor to come to the point of rendering service to him. So we have to try for this, it said. And then this text from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, devotional perfection is very difficult to obtain for two reasons. First, unless one is attracted to Krishna, he cannot attain devotional perfection, even if he renders devotional service for a long time. Second, Krishna does not easily deliver perfection in devotional service. And then followed up quickly by, to those who are constantly devoted to serving with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. It's very clear in the purport and in the texts here, the thing that we can immediately discern is that devotional service is a gift from Krishna. That's a basic tenet of our tradition of bhakti. So bhakti comes from Krishna. It's not by our endeavor. There's no yogic process. We started the readings by talking about a yogic process. There's no empiric speculative process. Again, in the early part of the reading, we were talking about that we can be atmarama also means the mind speculation becoming a mental speculator, and by that process we can understand something. But and then it says, "Oh, Krishna gives liberation very easily." So what is it we're looking for? Becomes a primary question. So we've established that devotional service, perfection in devotional service, is given by Krishna. He gives out liberation liberally. Just that's, you want have some liberation, take it, because that's not an issue for him. Liberation is about us. It's not about Krishna. It's just about, I want to be liberated. And it's interesting. Again, the text says, by the force of time, one attains whatever material happiness is available, just as one attains distress in due course of time. That's how the material world works. We're going to have some happiness and we're going to have some distress. It's just going to come naturally. And you can't have only happiness and you can't have only distress. So it's not worth getting attached to either. And we get attached to both. We can get very attached to our distress. It's great to have something to whinge about so you can play our violins and get attention. Because if you can't get attention any other way, well, then you can get attention by being miserable. And people will have pity on you, at least. You become a professional victim. And that's fine. That's one way we negotiate the world, and we try and eke out a little bit of happiness. So our desire is certainly to obtain happiness, but we're talking about material happiness, which is subject to the force of time, which means that there's a beginning and an end. And that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for something deeper than that, something more long-lasting. We're looking for eternal happiness. That's our desire. We don't want our happiness to end. And our vocabulary of this is, I love you forever and always and never leave me. And all, it's so simple. In every language, it's the same vocabulary. Why? Because it betrays our desire, betrays what we actually want. And then philosophically, it's very difficult to say what you want because it's so obvious that happiness doesn't last very long. So then we make up philosophies to say that, well, it's very important to have distress so you can appreciate happiness. If you don't have a little suffering, then you won't understand happiness and value it very much. And that's just sour grapes. That's just, well, I'm not going to get eternal happiness, so then I should learn how to appreciate material happiness, whatever little bit I can scrape off the barrel in this world. So we're dealing with that. If that's the happiness you want liberation from distress happiness, then that's easily available. That's not too difficult. That's one of the main reasons why most people come to devotional service, come to Krishna. Krishna says that in the Gita. So there are four types of people who attempt to come to him. The main reason is people are suffering. So they run into the temple, join their hands and say, help, 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 relieve my suffering. I think how you can best relieve my suffering is a BMW. It's a rather large BMW, I was thinking of. That would make me rather happy. You know, so we already have the we want to be relieved from suffering. We already have the idea how we can be relieved from suffering. We're just running into the temple, getting a stamp, and Krishna gives us a stamp, and we go from. I remember I hardly ever met an Indian in my life, but I joined the temple in Dublin. There were hardly any Indians in Dublin, and then one day this Indian gentleman knocked on the door and brushed past me and ran upstairs and went into the temple room and prostrated himself in front of the deity and gave a couple of pounds in the box. And I was astonished, never seen him before in my life. I don't know where he came from. And he was distressed. And he was, you know, in front of the deity going like this. And I said to him, I said, are you okay? And he said, oh yes, I've just come. I've come. I had to come. I had to come. I had to come. And I was thinking, oh my goodness, this is a pure devotee. I've been reading about them, and I knew you found them in India. But you know, here they are, you know, and there he was, and so I asked him. I said, "So why? I've never seen you before." And he said, "No, no, I have a shop. Someone broke into my shop. I had to come and ask the Lord. I had to ask the Lord, please don't let this happen again." And this is the last time we ever saw him. Just came and got some relief from distress and left. End of his sojourn in spiritual life. Getting liberation, that's not the issue. And getting a more profound liberation, that's not the issue for Krishna. But the issue is if we want a relationship with Krishna. So Prabhupada says something very interesting. Well, the text from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu says something very interesting. Devotional perfection is difficult to obtain. Two reasons. First, unless one is attracted to Krishna, there has to be an attraction to Krishna. Otherwise, we're not even talking about a relationship, and that's what the issue is about. It's not coming and just asking for some stuff from Krishna, that he can just give you some stuff. That's got nothing to do with him. That's got to do with you. So he just gives you whatever you want, and now please go away, because you know I have enjoyment to get on with, actual enjoyment. But if we want a relationship with Krishna, well, it's like us. Someone wants a relationship with us. We get a telephone call from someone selling life insurance, and it's an unwelcome telephone call. We don't care about it one way or the other. So how do we deal with that relationship? Someone wants a relationship with us where they want something. It's purely it's just a merchant asking for, you know, give me your money and I'll pretend to give you something back. So that's all the relationship. We don't want that relationship. You know, we refuse those calls. We ring up the telephone company and tell us, please don't let us have those calls. Cold callers come to our door and want to sell us something. We don't want that relationship. You know, if someone comes to you in life and is constantly wanting something from you, at a certain point, you just get fed up. You know, it's just, you give them money to go away. Or point to someone else. That's the person you should talk to. They've got unlimited compassion. It's not me. So, why are we expecting that Krishna enjoys that relationship? We just come running into the temple room and up to the altar and say, oh God, you never know what happened next, oh God, you know, help. If we want a relationship, then let's have a relationship. So unless one is attached to Krishna in some way, and it's not just about us, it's about Krishna. There's some appreciation of who Krishna is other than the person who relieves me from a bit of distress. It's like our developing relationship with our parents. You know, when you're young, the parent is just there to give you things. And, you know, whatever you want, if you want shelter, I remember, you know, I'd run out and say something to someone, then run back and grab onto my father's leg, you know, and hide behind his leg. And that's how you negotiate the world. You know, the father was there for protection, and the mother was there for giving comfort and food and all that kind of stuff. You just give me, give me, give me, give me. And as you grow up, then, you know, teenage years, just push them away. Let me be my own person. Yes, you're restricting me. You know, you've always been restricting me my whole life. Your whole life, you know. Let me go. And all of a sudden you want to be your own person. And then they let you be your own person, but they're still protecting you. And you're making it very difficult for them. If you want to be protected, you have to accept it. And you're making it very difficult for them. But still they go through it. And it's only in maybe the late 20s, 30s, is until you have a child yourself that you begin to realize what your parents have done, the sacrifices they've had to make, that the relationship becomes more mature. You begin to appreciate, you become actually attached to your parents in a different way. You know, there's more feeling develops. And this is just, I'm just talking about what a relationship is, just with material examples. So if we want a relationship with Krishna, it says, well, first, unless you're attached to Krishna, you can't attain devotional perfection, even if you render devotional service for a long time. So we can come and render devotional service and offer all kinds of things to Krishna, but we don't care very much about Krishna. We don't know very much. There's nothing in our heart about Krishna. We can go on like that forever. And it's just a religious process. It's a process just based on what we're getting from Krishna or some other thing. So that's the first thing. And the second thing, Krishna does not easily deliver perfection in devotional service. And so Prabhupada explains this. He says, this means that Krishna wants to see that a devotee is actually sincere and serious and does not have ulterior motives. So it's not that you enter into the relationship and then further down the line you say, oh, by the way, do you want life insurance? Nothing more annoying than someone who actually gains your confidence under false pretenses. If this is the case, devotional service can very easily be successful if you don't have ulterior motives. Otherwise, it is very difficult to obtain this from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because it's from Krishna we get this relationship. He allows us into the relationship. It's not that he doesn't want it. He wants it more than anything. It's that we don't want it. We just want things for ourselves. We're not looking for a relationship with Krishna. We're looking for stuff, like a child. Just give me the stuff. I want to be happy. Why can't I be happy now? Where are you? If I'll believe you if I see you. You know, and all this, it's just arrogant and selfish. We're not even looking for a relationship with Krishna, is our basic problem. And then the text, the illuminating text, one of my favorite texts in the Gita, actually. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. It's such a hopeful verse. So constantly devoted to serving with love. Consistency. It's not something we do on Sunday mornings or at Mongol Arti time or evening Arti time. It's consistent. Constantly devoted to serve. So what is that practice that is so consistent? And I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So it comes from Krishna. It doesn't come from religion. It doesn't come from institution. It doesn't even come from the Shastras. It comes from Krishna directly, the understanding. We can read the Shastras till we're blue in the face and not understand a single word or totally misunderstand every word. We can have a guru and listen to the guru and not understand a single word. We maybe don't have a guru. How do we become enlightened then? We may or may not be part of a religious institution. And so Krishna is saying these things aren't the important part. They can all be helpful, but they can also be a hindrance without getting the understanding. So how do you get the understanding? And if we're talking about pure devotional service, which is what Prabhupada only spoke about, then this is the only way we get the understanding, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love. So what does that constant devotion mean? Under what conditions, in what circumstances? Where does the constant devotion come in? And that's what Krishna wants to see. He wants to see our understanding of the relationship. What is a relationship? So how do we approach Krishna with devotion that's consistent? It means in every circumstance we see Krishna. We're looking for Krishna, actively looking for Krishna. And then we can begin to appreciate Krishna in every circumstance. So when we see Krishna, when we win the lottery, it's easy to see Krishna. Oh, Krishna, Hare Bol, thank you, Krishna. And don't worry, I will give you a donation. He's given us the whole lottery, and we're willing to give a little bit back. We're so generous. I remember I was on book distribution in Dublin many moons ago, and I got a £10 donation from someone. £10 in those days, that was a lot of money, you know, for a book.
Wow.
So I was thrilled a bit, so I was coming back and all the other donations, forget that, the £10 donation, that's something to tell everyone about, you know. So I'm going to get some credit out of it just by telling everyone. I'm going to become a Maharati book distributor. And then as I was going back, I passed the shop and I suddenly realized I needed a toothbrush. Now the process in the ashram of getting a toothbrush was you go to the treasurer and you have some negotiation and it takes some time and he releases a toothbrush, you know, after you convince him that, you know, your teeth are valuable. So I thought, well, I have this £10, maybe it's only going to be like, you know, 80 pence I can get a toothbrush. So that was 80 pence spent. And I passed another shop and a pair of socks. I needed a pair of socks. And maybe I just buy the pair of socks here and it'll just be easier, wouldn't it, and all that kind of stuff. And mentally, I didn't actually buy any of these things, but mentally, I had spent £5.50 by the time I got to the temple. You know, and that was just, I gained ownership. You know, 20 minutes before, I didn't have the £10. Now it was mine. It was mine to do with what I will, all of a sudden. It was such a stark lesson. Here's me living in an ashram as a brahmachari. Everything I owned was in a suitcase and all that kind of stuff. And this was my mantra. I could preach this to everyone how great I was. But mentally, what was my attachment? Who was I? You know, and I was someone independent of Krishna. You know, and this money was becoming mine. It had more than 50% become mine in 20 minutes. That's quite heavy when you think of it. So I wasn't just willing just to go and give it to Krishna, so happy, this is my devotional service. It wasn't even devotional service anymore. What was it? So, you know, Krishna was saying, am I serious about this relationship? Am I willing to practice this? And these are the issues that we have to begin to deal with. What's actually going on in our heart? Why are we involved in devotional service? These are the important questions to ask ourselves. Are we constantly devoted to serving Krishna with love? What does love mean in this case? We do it anyway. You know, how does a mother take care of their child anyway? The child offers stool, urine, and vomit, basically. You know, crying, keeping you up at night, and all that kind of stuff. You serve them anyway, of course. That's the basis of love. It's something you do regardless. It's consistent. So how consistent are we going to be? If someone comes along with a different philosophy that's more gratifying to our senses, to our mind, to our intellect, are we going to get involved in that? Some new process of self-development, etc., etc.? What processes are we going to adopt to supplement the fact that we're not happy in Krishna consciousness? How do we become happy in Krishna consciousness? So what does happiness mean? What does love? Happiness is our desire, and love is Krishna's desire. So Radha Gopinath want our love. We want to be happy. So is it a negotiation? How are we going to develop this relationship? So these texts are in one sense they're stark. In another sense they give us real hope. That this verse from 10:10 in the Gita, it gave me real hope. Krishna is willing to give us the understanding, this understanding that it isn't dependent on anything else, that we can't achieve by any other method except through relationship with Krishna, which is what Prabhupada says. It's a relationship, and we approach the Lord and appreciate the Lord for who the Lord is, not appreciate the Lord for what we want from Him. Prabhupada used to quote that a pickpocket only sees a saint's pockets. Yeah, so what are we seeing when we see Krishna? Do we see the order? He's the one who's going to give us stuff. So we go in front of the Lord, He will relieve our suffering, He will give us a good wife, husband, make sure our children love me, blah, blah, blah. Who is that person? What is our appreciation? What is our attachment? And if things get heavy in our life, and life has a tendency to get like that, who are we going to turn to then? Then where is Krishna in our life? Now, all of us are going to experience so many difficulties. We do experience so many difficulties. And if you think it's going to get better, I'm sorry to inform you. It doesn't really get better. There's so many formulas for happiness that are ingrained in our consciousness, that we get married, that will give us happiness. We have children, that will give us happiness. We get a nice occupation or nice living facilities, that will give us happiness. And all these things. And we know theoretically that that's not the case. Even the Beatles were able to sing Money Can't Buy You Love. You know, and we all kind of signed up to that. So money can't, of course money can't buy you love, but it's very helpful. But, you know, we want money, we want companionship and friendship, we want intimacy, we want the love of our children or our grandchildren. These are material opulences. We want good looks, we want good education, we want good birth. These are material opulences. These are how we define ourselves materially. And then all the celebrity culture has developed of the people who have these things. And we worship them. It's the worship of demigods. It's idol worship. We worship these people in some way. And we read their stories and are fascinated by how miserable they are, actually. But the fact is, what are we looking for? And have we got any chance of attaining it? And in the material context, there isn't a chance. So where are we going to turn? And do we turn to Krishna when things get rotten? And that's what the consistency in devotion is. So when your child dies, what are you going to do? And I know circumstances of devotees, good devotees, who, you know, experienced children die and then left Krishna consciousness. Couldn't reconcile it. Now, where did we miss the point? When we read the philosophy, it says that death is an inevitable part of life. Where is the point that we didn't get that? But the fact is, we don't get that. This, the beginning of philosophy is the contemplation of that fact. Where is the situation where you're going to be in devotional service and then some political turn of events comes around and all of a sudden you're persona non grata. You're not wanted anymore. You're removed from your service. I know the devotee who was the biggest book distributor in England for many years, by far bigger than anybody else, and she got married. And on the day of her marriage, she was taken to the temple president's room and he took all the facility from her. She had to leave the temple, you know, and whatever she had was taken from her, and thank you very much, bye-bye. And very ungracious bye-bye to her. See you, thanks for all your service. And she just felt devastated, unloved, uncared for by the community that she had dedicated her life to, her heart to, and just yanked out, thrown out. And you can say, oh, her husband was there to take care of her, but he was the biggest Sankirtan devotee on the male side. He was told the same. Just, bye, it's up to you now. Given no facility, having collected thousands of pounds, hundreds of thousands of pounds, not even given 5 pence to go off and start your life. Just the milk of human kindness wasn't offered. How do you receive that? You know, you're a senior devotee and you've led a blameless life and you've tried your best and all of a sudden there's some hiccup, some difficulty. And then everyone just shuts you down and says, no, you've made a mistake. Out. Ross, Schnell, and that's it. That's the end. No calculation of time spent performing service in Krishna consciousness. One mistake and you're socially excluded. Where does the verse that says a saintly person, even if they cause a most abominable effect, is still considered saintly? When do we actually use that text? Yeah, but what about the person on the receiving end? What about this Sankirtan devotee? What about a senior devotee in that position? What about the person who loses their child? How do they receive it? And that's us. All these things are going to happen to us in one way or another. So how do you look at that senior devotee? Well, I look at circumstances, and there's so many examples of that in this kind. But you see someone like that, and then you see them continuing in the devotional service, totally humiliated. Krishna has taken the last thing that they had, reputation, and just taken it away from them in an instant. And they still continue to perform devotional service. Then you understand this was part of their spiritual life. It's not a social event. It's a spiritual event. The Sankirtan devotee, how did she receive it? She just didn't flinch. Continued on in her service. Continued doing Sankirtan. Continued giving her money to the temple because she was consistent in her devotion. She wasn't doing it for the temple. She was doing it for Krishna. She had an actual appreciation of Krishna. That was betrayed to us when this event happened. Without this event, she wouldn't have understood how attached she was to Krishna. She couldn't even leave the deities. I mean, that was emotionally enough to let her go off and join the Mormons or something, you know, where she could actually be loved. You know, but that wasn't her issue. Her issue was she was attached to Krishna. So she wasn't going to leave Krishna, even though she was in a humbled circumstance. I remember my wife and I were, we had done the first Irish Rathiatra, and it just circumstantially, it so happened that when we started to develop this Rathiatra, and it was a great festival, it was a whole week of festivities we organized, and we had 13 musicians and dancers come from India, all paid for by the Indian government, and Irish musicians, and they were playing together because Irish and Indian music are very similar, and national concert hall, like national radio. The Lord Mayor was there, members of Parliament. Then the big Rathiatra, the Mayor came out to sweep the street, all this kind of old pucker. But just as we started to organize it, the Irish Atra fell apart politically. Everyone stopped talking to each other. People walked out of the temples. Just the whole thing was a complete mess. We didn't even know if anyone was going to turn up for the Rathiatra. This is going to be myself, my wife, and the Lord Mayor pulling the cart. Yeah. So we organized English devotees, Scottish devotees. It was just, you know. And in the end, the Irish Atra came out, and it was all great. So just so, because no one was engaged, then it fell on me to pay for the whole thing. And I didn't have any money. I was just a temple wallet. So I had to go out and collect all kinds of money. I was £4,000 in debt at the end of it. So I thought, okay, I'll deal with that. The next week, the head of the Atra rang up the temple president, where my wife and I were staying, and said that all the grihasthas in the temple have to pay X amount of money every week, blah, 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 blah. There was only one grihastha couple in the temple, myself and my wife. And that meant we had to pay all this money, and we had minus money. So we had to leave the temple that day. So the next day we came back to the temple, because it was Sunday. And I'd actually been asked to give the Sunday lecture. So we came back to the temple. As soon as we walked in the temple, this young devotee that my wife had preached to and made a devotee approached her with a broom and said, "So glad you've come to visit our temple. If you sweep the floor, it will clean your heart." This is after years of devotional service, after making this person a devotee and educating them and, you know, and caring for them in a nice way. And this is my assumption. So, you know, on the ego platform, that's enough grounds to turn around, walk away, and wipe the dust off your shoes and never go back to that place again, because they have no respect. But that's not what was happening. What was happening was Krishna saying, "You think you're so great? So are you going to perform devotional service now? And what if I do this? Will you perform devotional service now?" And that's all that's happening. The material circumstance isn't important. We give it importance. We make it the issue. And it never was the issue. We don't join because we want reputation. We don't join because we want this facility or that facility. And all these issues are about reputation. And if it comes to getting something taken from us, we have a child taken from us, or a spouse, or a mother, or a father, something like that. Well, that was going to happen anyway. We know that. It's just, this is the time that it happened. Krishna didn't take them from us. It was just the time. It's the cycle of time. It's going to be happiness and distress. You're going to come. How do we receive them? Do we receive them as a gift from Krishna? Or as, I hate you, I hate you. It's your fault. You did this to me. What's that? It's not love. That's fear. That's attachment to something other than Krishna. Krishna's exposing us to ourselves. That's a great mercy. That really deepens our understanding of who we are in relation to Krishna. And really helps us appreciate Krishna. And we know that in every adverse situation, we have to find Krishna very quickly. We have to gain that perspective. And actually there was an adverse situation I was in as a young devotee, and I didn't know how to deal with it. And I just opened up the Bhagavatam looking for perspective. I prayed to Krishna, please help give me perspective. Opened up the first canto. And then in the purport, I just read this line. The first line I read said, every adversity in the life of a devotee is directly the mercy of the Lord. Just... Now, I look back on that adversity, which was the biggest thing in the world then, and it was so nothing.
It was nothing.
You know, I've had so many adversities since that, you know, forget it. You just walk through that one. But at that time, that was the biggest thing. And that was the thing I had to understand. This difficulty in my life is directly the mercy of the Lord. That's how a devotee meditates. It's a sadhana. It's something that we do all the time, consistently devoted. So when the good thing comes, well, it's quite easy to see Krishna and thank him and all that. But when the bad thing comes, we have to then invoke our meditation, our sadhana, and just go, Krishna. Now, where is Krishna in this? This is a difficulty in my life. This is how I'm perceiving it. But it's actually the mercy of the Lord. Now, initially, that's a difficult meditation to follow through. You know, like a child when they get their sweets taken away. It's the biggest thing in the world. You know, I used to live for sweets. Buttermilk and sugar. Anything with buttermilk and sugar. And if it was taken away, it was like, oh, whoa. I remember my mother used to feed us, it was a thing in the 60s. Mothers used to get their children glucose, a spoon of glucose once a week. And glucose, essentially sugar. I don't know why they did that, but it was medically profound at the time. And my job in life was to find where she hid the glucose. You know, and I found it one time, and she was actually very good at hiding it, but I found it was in a pot. And I found it, and I went and got the appropriate spoon, which is the dessert spoon, the big one, and dug in, and I put it, and she caught me. You know, she came in, and I had it halfway in my mouth at the time, and she started to pull it out, and I remember this war, as I just wasn't going to give in. So that was the biggest thing in my life. I was so upset to be caught. God. But so it's like that with us. We have some difficulty and it's the biggest thing in our life. And we have to see Krishna in it. This is Krishna's mercy. And, you know, it's a practice. And we have to focus on it. And then when the really big thing happens in our life with that meditation, the first thing that will come into our head is Krishna. We'll understand it because we're going to die someday. And it's not going to be nice. No one wants to die. We don't jump at it. And we're going to be, you know, slowly expelled from the body. And we're going to have to be ready for it and receive it with open arms. And go, Krishna, thank you for this mercy. It has to be a meditation that we're ready for. We don't want to be undignified at that time. You know, we have to be ready for it. And how we practice it is by practicing our attachment to Krishna now. Seeing Krishna in our life. Every aspect of our life is full of Krishna. And we don't see it like that. We see it as full of all kinds of other explanations. It's like Prabhupada was reading Time magazine on the newspaper on the airplane one time. It was in the seat pocket. And he read it a few pages. And I turned to a devotee and says, devotees shouldn't read this. And the devotee said, why, Prabhupada? And he said, because it makes the material world look real. It's very interesting angle. Because when we read the newspaper and all this, and we listen to the news, then that's the reality of the world is being expressed. And it's not for a devotee. The real part is Krishna's involvement, understanding Krishna in the world, understanding Krishna in our life. So being able to come in front of Radha Gopinath, and the most horrible thing has happened to you, and to go in front of them without any distress in your head and say, thank you, Krishna. You know, that's attachment, that's appreciation. And that's, you know, to those who are constantly devoted, then nothing is going to shake us from our engagement with Krishna. We're not going to drift off into some la-la land, you know, some new philosophy, etc. It's not about philosophy. It's not about techniques or processes that we get so attached to that this is going to make us happy, this is going to make us happy, this is going to relieve our stress, this will increase my understanding. The word is, we know Krishna is the only one who can increase the understanding that matters. The understanding of who I am. I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. How do I practice that in daily life? How is that real? We walk outside the temple, that's not real. No one will give you any credit that that's real. It's ridiculous. It's a crazy notion. You're just a member of a cult. So how do we retain that that's real in our heart? Because that's the meditation of the acharyas. And that's what we're being asked to engage with. So there are some thoughts on Chaitanya Charitamrita and the explanation of the Atmaranga verse today. Srila Prabhupada ki. Has anyone got any further explanations or comments?
I was just remembering when you were talking about when one understands it's Krishna, but there's this song of Prabhupada, he's in Vrindavan, and he's talking about, you know, he has a fruitless glory because he has no money and everybody's rejected him and his parents and princesses are all gone. Please tell me where we are. And, you know, you're ready to cry, and he sits and I sit here and I laugh. He said, today, the real and naked truth of the material energy is being revealed to me. I don't know how I got such mercy. Like he was speaking like that. But when you first hear it, you feel like crying. But then after that, you realize he's doing what you said. He's thanking Krishna for all this.
Very good. Yeah. You can see clearly as the meditation of the acharya. Just read the song book, read the songs, and you can see this meditation. They're not disturbed by the changes of the material world. And it is, of course, distressing when we lose a friend and a mother and a father, and these are people who have been put into our life for a specific reason, and we need to appreciate them. But, yes, very good.
Mahaprabhu. It seems that some level of, I mean, there seems to be some compatibility with seeing Krishna in some adversity and some level of complaining with lamentation, with, because, you know, you're not really, like what happened to you, you may see Krishna or whatever, but still, we express our feelings and that seems okay. It's just if we get carried away and make the wrong decisions and all that. But, you know, we all, if something really bad happens to us, we might express what we feel and what happened without necessarily losing bigger picture of Krishna behind us. Because to not say anything and say it's all Krishna, it sounds a little bit like not very, sounds a little artificial or not human. Mm-hmm. We can't express some feelings, some emotion, some you know, or an observation. Mm-hmm. Really happy with the temple actually did, what were the actual facts, even if you're not too much affected.
Yeah. No, you're perfectly right. No, I'm sorry that I didn't balance it out. There's only so many things you can say in the time that we have, and I focused a little bit on the philosophy. But and it's like Prabhupada, particularly in his books, he's very philosophical. But if you read his letters and conversations, he's much more human. And we can't forget that human side. Look in the Mahabharata, and you know, someone dies in the battlefield, everyone comes back in the evening and they all cry, these big kshatriyas, and they all cry, they're all upset. Why? Because that's normal and natural. And you can't avoid it. And if you try and avoid it, you're really going to screw yourself up. You know, so emotions are just things you have to let flow. You can't put any bar on them. They just happen. You know, they come and go as they please. And if you try and put a bar on them, then you're going to suffer like crazy. So I was explaining to someone the other day, I just remembered this. My father died when I was 15. And as a 15-year-old, you don't know how to grieve. You know, you just go through all the motions and all the rituals and procedures. And then about the age of 36, I was in New Mayapur giving a Bhagavatam class. And something in the text just sparked something off. And it just brought back the whole instance of my father's death and what it meant to me. I was very attached to my father. You know, he's a great influence and that continues to be a great influence on my life. But all of a sudden this came back. Now as a 36-year-old, my meditation on his death was much different than a 15-year-old. And I hadn't thought about it. I had just left it behind. All of a sudden, he was a 36-year-old, you know. So I struggled through that class not to cry. You know, it was a real thing. And the class got slower and slower, and everyone thought, oh, it's profound, oh, it was really deep stuff, you know. But it was just me just trying to keep my act together. But I had to cry, and I spent, you know, some months just going over this. What in God's name is happening? You can't explain emotions. They just come, you just relax, let them flow, you know. But I began to realize that, you know, I was remembering my father's final sickness, and he was sick for about 6 months before he died, and we all knew he was going to die, and, you know, everything that went on then. And as a kid, I didn't, you know, he would sit and tell me things. And I realized, you know, as an older person, I realized he was trying to impart some knowledge. And I was sitting there like a kid going, I didn't, you know, I listened and I heard and I remembered, but I didn't realize how poignant this was for him. You know, and what a great effort it must have been for him to be so dutiful as to try to help me like that. He was dying, but he was concerned about me. You know, all this stuff, you know, and my reaction at the time was just 15-year-old blank slate face, no idea how to express yourself. Just saying, go, and he would show, but my father taught me this, and you should do this as well. I go, That's not the reaction he needed. You know, he needed more. I wanted to give him more, but he wasn't there. I was very sad. All of a sudden, I was very sad about the whole thing. So what are you going to do about that? You know, so if something traumatic happens, there's going to be shock and grief, and you go through whatever you go through happily. We've got to go through it. There's no bar. You know, you can't put a dam on emotions, because it'll find a way out. You know, it's like going to the toilet or something. You don't decide not to go to the toilet because it's moochy. You know, I'm a pujari, I shouldn't go to the toilet, it's polluting. It's nonsensical. You know, I shouldn't cry because, you know, whatever. Well, we're going to cry sometime. You know, and you know, if you don't deal with it, it's going to come out your ear. You know, it's going to come out somewhere. It's just, you know, you're in a Bhagavatam class and all of a sudden, you know, I want to cry because my father's death 15 years before, you know. So I don't know how these things work, but Krishna, you know. That was Krishna to help me understand something as well. How much I owed to my father. And we spend a lot of time in devotional service pretending we don't have fathers and mothers. That we're detached and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, after that time, I got a picture of my father. And I have a picture of my father in my office. Because, I'm recognizing this person continues to have an influence on my life. That person was given to me by Krishna. This isn't separate from my Krishna consciousness. This is part of my Krishna consciousness. So this is seeing Krishna. And then appreciating Krishna more for giving me such a good person to help guide my life. Such a dharmic, kind of dutiful person. You know, and he was a Roman Catholic meat eater and all that kind of stuff. But that's not the impression that was left with me. You know, so the devotees can come and say, who's this, your father? Carmi, hog rolls, canvas, and all that kind of stuff. I'll punch them in the face. Out of emotional fervor. Because they're insulting Krishna's mercy. You know, and that's me. That's my understanding. So my relationship with my father is part of my Krishna consciousness. And then I look at Prabhupada, and Prabhupada dedicates the Krishna book to his father, who was part of his Krishna consciousness. So I'm not doing anything that the acharyas haven't done. We see everything in relation to Krishna. And we see the emotion in relation to Krishna. You know, what kind of relationships do we have with people if they're in a difficulty and we don't feel? You know what I mean? Those feelings override everything. You know, in Krishna consciousness, we're very careful not to touch each other. You know, because, you know, it's that icky sexual stuff, you know. And, but, you know, you see someone passes away, everyone comes up and hugs each other. Men, it's not an issue. That's not what's going on. It's not a sexual event. It's compassion. It's just human compassion. It's just how you feel. You just need to give that person that comfort. And that's how you do it in this culture, that culture. You know, we're not Bengali or Gujarati or Tamil. You know, we're partly human. You know, so you know, however it expresses itself. So you make a very good point. Thank you for bringing it. I think that our time has come. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Chaitanya Charitamrita ki. Jai.